Good evening, this is Gary Kavanagh here on the right side with my friend and colleague Michael Dwyer. Today is Wednesday the 5th of February. We are 3 days away from the election, which means that we will have to talk about it at least once more, and then we're done. The leaders' debate was last night. It was Micheál Martin, Leo, and Mary Lou, because Orty decided at the last moment that they would pay attention to the one thing they said they would never pay attention to, opinion polls and the opinions of the public.
Yes.
However, I did want to start by talking about a different election, very, very briefly, just because it's funny. You may not have been following the Democratic primaries over in America, but if you have been, they had their vote, they had their primary vote in Iowa the other day, and it broke down pretty much immediately.
It's a bit of a worry, Gary. You know, these are the people that are basically running the world, or at least want to run the world. And honest to God,
it turns out they can't count votes.
They can't organize. They couldn't organize a branch meeting in Killorglin.
So they had the primary, and then it turned out, oh well, we actually don't have the results. Several things have gone wrong. My personal favorite, and we're not going to go into this in detail, was that they had a company develop a voting app, which broke down immediately. That app was developed by a company called Shadow.
Shadow.
Which appears to be, from the images people are sending around of LinkedIn profiles, appears to be comprised entirely of ex-Hillary Clinton staffers.
You know, if you're going to set up a company like that, staffed by Hillary people, which ends up screwing over, well, no, that's not true. Which,
it looks like it's screwed over Bernie Sanders.
It's very much the Sanders people believe it anyway. Why would you, Shadow? Why not just go the whole hog and call it Spectre?
I know my favorite, from the results we've seen, Pete, as he demands he be referred to, coming out on top, and Sanders is coming out second.
Do you know how to pronounce his surname?
Buttigieg.
Buttigieg, I don't trust you on that. I really don't. You're not.
Then why would you ask?
Because I want to get something which approximates to it, so that if I repeat it to someone, they'll know what I mean.
Buttigieg.
It's an odd one. He'll get more money and that would be fun. The Sanders people online are going, hoo-ha, lula.
In fairness,
a lot of them don't have to go very far to pick up the conspiracy papers. There was
last time he went against Hillary Clinton, and then they found out that the DNC was rigging things so that Sanders would lose.
Yeah.
So I don't think they have a great deal of trust for the Democratic Party to begin with.
To be fair, you know, sometimes the conspiracies are actually happening. And the DNC was out to get them, you know.
Well, that's the thing. It's not a conspiracy if they're actually out to get you. But I did love the app developed by the company called Shadow, entirely staffed by Hillary Clinton's people, which has led to Bernie being number two. The first reaction I saw to it from the Sanders people was just an image which contained over it the headline, they've Epsteined Iowa.
I saw a tweet which was, and the winner of the Iowa caucus is Donald Trump.
There was an old Onion headline from years ago.
Yeah.
And it was just Democrats somehow lose own primary.
That's right.
And you're just like, the reaction of the Republicans was amazing, because I'm sure they got a press briefing on this.
Yeah.
Because tons of them just started putting stuff up going, the Democrats want to run your healthcare and they can't even count.
Yeah, this was the great thing. The Democrats lose Iowa caucus was going all around. Looking at the meta story, the reporting of the story, I think it was the New York Times headline was, Republicans gloat over technical difficulties in Iowa caucus. Not Democrats make absolute hames and hash of a caucus, but Republicans gloat.
The great thing is there were high-level members of the DNC coming out before, talking about all the changes they made that made sure that Iowa was going to be this modern, seamless event, and then it just went to the wall. But also, did you see Donald Trump give the State of the Union address?
Sorry? Did you say that again?
He gave the State of the Union.
Sorry, and I genuinely thought you said he gave the State of Union in address.
No, he gave the State of the Union address.
Okay, that works better.
Maybe I'm mumbling more than usual.
No,
but he walked by Nancy Pelosi and didn't shake her hand, and so it got to the end of her speech, which was difficult to listen to because the Republicans just clap at everything now.
Yeah,
it was ridiculous. It was like a standing ovation for successfully pronouncing the word there. And then she just behind him just rips up his speech in an act of incredible pettiness.
Oh, the look on their face, which obviously is recorded there. And he's doing his thing, he's standing there, and behind she's looking at him with this. It's actually the look of a jilted lover. You think you're so good, I can't stand you. Give me back my LPs.
What I really like is there's a photo of her standing up to try and shake his hand, mm-hmm. and you know, people saying he snubbed her. But she's on the, she's where she sits, which is above him. So it's actually entirely possible he just didn't see her and didn't intend to snub her at all. And she just took that so poorly that she just goes around ripping up speeches.
Yeah.
This is the sort of adult behaviour we need to restore America.
Is that the thing? If he, we don't know. I mean, it's possible it's Donald. Maybe he didn't want to shake hands. But you're not going to win. If you get down in the sandbox and start to play Donald games with Donald, you're going to lose. He'll do it more, and he'll do it bigger, and he'll do it better than you.
And he'll have fun doing it.
Yeah, that's the thing. She was obviously just poisonously pissed off with him. Whereas the thing is that people look at Donald when he does it, and he looks like a... You're that kind of bad... You're like a terrier that goes after people's legs and, you know, just takes pleasure in it. He just likes to see people jump in the air. Trump is like that. He's just constantly amused by people.
Did you see him with the pens?
No, I thought no.
Oh, it's fantastic. When Pelosi signed, I think it might have been the letters to send the impeachment on. She got special pens made with her signature on them, commemorative pens. Donald Trump during the week was and she was giving them out to people as a commemorative thing. Donald Trump during the week was signing something, and he just started giving people like handfuls of pens, like fistfuls of them, and it goes on for like 2 minutes, and he's just giving people like a dozen pens at once. And you're like, I think he's mocking Nancy Pelosi. So she might have been angry about that as well, but it's a fantastic level for politics to be at. It's not a policy thing. I just hate you.
Do you know what, Gary? People over in Ireland complain at times about the length of elections. I mean, it's hard to complain about the length of this one because...
I mean, at this point, the American presidential elections don't seem to ever stop.
Well, they last... You'd have to say that they definitely last a year now.
Mm.
I mean, even in the most restrictive sense, the actual polling day is in November. And Iowa and then New Hampshire. So at the very least, it's like it's a 10-month process. It must be absolutely exhausting for everybody involved.
Yet Donald Trump doesn't look exhausted. He
looks younger. He is the first man in the history of the United States to look younger after being president for 4 years.
I think that may be because he has like a personal chef, like. Whose job is to keep him alive, as opposed to the personal chefs he used to have, where it's just feed me anything I want.
Or maybe it's a personal surgeon.
But he just looks like he's having so much fun.
I mean, you know the famous the photos of Lincoln?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Lincoln genuinely looks like he's 20 years older. He's just horribly aged. But all of them do. But Donald, no. I don't know. Would it be a little bit? Would it be more fun if we had a little bit of that? Last night was not State of the Union stuff, was it?
No,
the great debate. I mean, to be fair, it was the closest thing we've had so far to an actual debate.
It was, and there was one weird thing I found about it, and it was an unnecessary thing. It was Miriam O'Callaghan's involvement in it.
Now, I think both of us think the same thing, but to be clear, I thought that Miriam did an excellent job.
No, she did.
But that's not the point, is it?
There was absolutely no evidence of bias, I think, in Miriam's job. But at the same time, Miriam O'Callaghan is the sister of the current Fianna Fáil spokesperson for justice, Jim O'Callaghan.
Yeah.
And it simply wouldn't happen in most countries that you would let a leader's debate be moderated by a relative of one of the spokespeople of one of that party. It simply wouldn't be done. And it's RTE creating a stick to beat it with that didn't need to be there in the first place. And again, Miriam, I think, did an excellent job. But it's kind of like with judges. It's not about avoiding impropriety. It's avoiding the appearance of impropriety.
You have to be Caesar's wife in these things. It's not enough not to be good. You must be seen to be good.
Now, also, it's never... None of this stuff is ever mentioned.
Yeah,
but not just in relation to Miriam, but in other ones. So anyone who knows, knows. And most other people, because it's not mentioned, it's never dealt with, it feels like people are trying to keep it secret.
That's true. And that's true about a lot of stuff. Not big stuff, but lots of things like this. I've noticed it more in the last couple of years. You think, but isn't he and with her and didn't she do, and wasn't he... And that is the so-and-so's son. And all these connections. And you realise they're never actually, in a way that is almost odd. I wouldn't say suspicious, but it's like there's a tacit, we don't talk about that. If you know, you know. And if you know, it's okay. But if you don't know, there's no reason to scare the horses or something. Now, maybe RTE would say simply, listen, she's a journalist. She's a very competent one. If we were going to apply that principle, then she could never really be involved in any kind of politics, because on that principle, she would just be seen to be tainted by the fact of being her brother's sister, and she couldn't do interviews with Leo or with Micheál Martin or whatever. But it's a small country. Everybody knows everybody, I suppose.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think this is effectively the most, the largest electoral debate in this country, the most impactful, because it contains the three leaders.
And it's RTE as well, and people pay more attention to the RTE vote.
So the impact of any bias that would be there would be much more significant than in an everyday interview.
So, who won? Did anybody win?
In it about you all need to achieve different things, depending on how you're doing when you get into it. So if you're losing, you need to do incredibly well. If you're winning before you go in, you just need to not fuck up. By that metric, I would say it was probably Mary Lou's debate. I don't think she did incredibly well, but she was, in general, competent. Yeah. And she went into it needing a lot less than the other two did. I mean, for the other two, it was really just a chance to destroy Sinn Féin, or to cause Mary Lou to destroy Sinn Féin. And there were a couple of moments she wavered slightly, and it could have gone a bit dodgy, but Mary Lou is a fairly good speaker.
It's always a tricky one in a situation like this. If you're Micheál Martin or Leo Varadkar, and you're there, you want to really stick it to them, you know? You really want to go all out. But then it's a bit like if you're playing golf or you're playing tennis or squash or something. The temptation, you just start to try and hit the ball so hard that you actually, your timing goes and you make mistakes. Rather than just relying on your natural game. I think she did rather less well, I think, than you did, Gary. But the problem, as I said to you before, was we're in a new world. This is all new stuff. We're now seeing all these ABC voters, these middle-class voters who are willing or intending to vote for Sinn Féin. They're up at 25. What we don't know is how committed they are. Like, if on a voter intensity, as if you were 8 out of 10 certain you're going to vote for Sinn Féin, I don't think that anything that happened last night would change your mind. If you were a 5 out of 5, you think, yeah, there's a couple of little shaky things. I thought Mary was very strong, as she always is, when she was attacking Martin and Varadkar. When she was on her own topic, when she was on her own policy, she was a lot shakier. I thought the tax issue, the 4 billion that was going to come out of nowhere, that was a strong point by Martin. Generally speaking, the funding issue was poor. But I think you'd have to be somebody who was just very much on the cusp. And even then, I would say we're very close. We're very close to Saturday night. If this had been held 2 weeks ago, and there was another one of these to come, then I think that Mary Lou might be a little bit more worried that, you know, they had drawn a little bit of blood that they could come back and exploit. They'd worked out where to exploit her. To the extent that this was, it's hard to see this as being a shifting any large numbers.
No, I mean, I think that's the point. And I'm not sure I think Mary Lou actually did any better than you did, but I think she had to do less, much less to begin with.
All she had to do, yeah, she had to stand up and straight. And Sinn Féin are trending up. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are both trending down. We all talk, all the talk is about Fine Gael. We have to, Fianna Fáil is trending down also. So they need, they are faced with the challenge of not just, first of all, stopping that trend and trying to do something that would actively attract people to them. She was in the position where if she could hold steady, it's a big win. I mean, yeah. You said it, Gary, before, when, and it's absolutely right. People are now talking about why the hell didn't they run more candidates? What a strategic error. She's in a position now when 3-4 weeks ago, if she had been offered 14%, she would have taken your arm off at the elbow, as would all of the big boys in Sinn Féin.
Absolutely. And I've seen like people who know about politics, like respected people in political science, saying that, well, she's made a terrible strategic mistake, which is sort of like going to someone who you, after they've won the lotto,
yeah,
and saying, I mean, you should have invested heavier earlier.
Yeah.
It was a terrible strategic mistake. Yeah. It's very easy. So if you know the outcome of something, no one would ever make a mistake.
You should have won the lottery.
You would always make the right choice.
You should have won the lottery last week when the jackpot was bigger.
But it's this weird thing of, because it now looks like it's going one way, it was you make your choices based on the best available projections you have and the best data you have.
Right now.
Not on, well, what if we just go up 3 times in the poll what we expect?
Listen, right now, Mython in Wexford is expected to top the poll and to be elected on the first count. That's the wide expectation. We'll see if it happens. That's the same man that last May lost his county council seat. He couldn't be elected to the county council. And now people expect him to, well, confidently expect him to get 12,000, 13,000 votes. That is not something that was being predicted. That was after the county council elections, Sinn Féin were, do you know, actually, we haven't mentioned really in the context of it, but the dog, yet again, the dog that didn't bark. The surge that we all were told was coming was the Great Green Wave, which hath not materialised. And you know what? It's a funny thing. We had a green debate, even though every politician has pretty well admitted now. Anybody's out there said that it's just not on the doorstep. But it actually may be key to the success of Sinn Féin. So much of the talk on RTÉ. RTÉ has been out there pushing the green line hard. Lots and lots of talk about the green line. And it has drawn people's attention. So people have actually been forced to think about it. And maybe to think about the consequences of individual policies. And it's not sexy, but I think the Sinn Féin policy on carbon tax has been a massive winner for them.
I think so too. To be able to just go out and go, look, there's no alternative for many people in rural Ireland. It's just going to make things more expensive. And we're not going to do it. And I think it was Micheál Martin coming out, and his line was, we've all decided that this is the only option. It's really emblematic of the problem of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael together at this point. They agree on everything.
But the language, that kind, how off-putting is that to your pissed-off voter?
But the thing is,
we have all agreed.
It's not the only thing that can be done. And if the ERSI, when it did its reports on carbon tax, even they accepted, and this is the ERSI, that carbon taxes are generally strongly regressive, which is to say they hurt the poorest people most.
Yes.
And it needs to be that by design, because it's designed to change consumption patterns. And if it doesn't hurt you, you won't change your consumption patterns. So I think it's absolutely correct for a party that cares about poor people to stand up and go, well, this is actually quite damaging, and so we're not just going to blindly do it.
Particularly when we know, from what we think we know, for behaviour-changing taxes need to be fairly substantial. before people will actually change their behavior. So you're talking about significant impact. And there is no, to paraphrase, there is no alternative. Also, not the point we're talking about, but as Lundberg in Copenhagen has pointed out, that if you're actually talking about the best way to achieve carbon reductions, these are not. This is not the way to go.
No, I mean, the problem here has always been that Ireland produces an incredibly small amount of the world's pollution.
Yeah.
So there's always been, and you've heard this from Leo, of we want to be world leaders in this.
Why?
And there is a cost to that in how it will impact on people.
And
so effectively, Sinn Féin has just gone, this achieves nothing, but we'll feel good about ourselves, but we won't feel terribly good about ourselves if we sock it to the purr. So we're not going to do it.
And this is happening at the same time when there's been a lot of reporting in the press, on TV and in the press, about the shift over from diesel and petrol to electric cars. There have been two or three reports coming from different sources, all coming to the same conclusion, that move, that in the medium to long term, electric cars are going to continue to be considerably more expensive than fossil fuel driven cars. And those subsidies that are now available to incentivize people to come over, they're going to go. They have to go if people, it's going to be massive.
They're too good.
Way too good. A friend of ours has got a ridiculous deal on a car. It's madness, the level, the write-offs he's getting on a very fancy piece of automotive machinery.
I mean, just to go back to the debate itself, one thing I think that was actually pretty clear from it is that Fianna Fáil is taking the threat of Sinn Féin far more seriously than Fine Gael. I think there were clearly points where Leo would say something and Martin would just pull back instead of just levelling. I mean, like,
I agree.
What was considered to be one of the lines of the night by Leo, where he said that bringing Fianna Fáil back into power would be like inviting John Delaney back into the FAI after 9 years. Considered one of Leo's finest points.
Well, it was an open goal.
I mean, Martin had to turn around and make a point about Leo's €12 million on spin doctors and ask him how long it took them to find that or if the money was worth it. And just a snide comment could have shut it down. And he didn't.
And also, by the way, the relationship of Leo, John Delaney and this government. Sorry, just to very quickly finish, but the point I was making about the cars is not just a general, but rather that it spoke to these people in Sinn Féin, and this Sinn Féin issue, because the point was that poor people are going to be driven off the road. And again, this doesn't seem to be a concern to Fine Gael, particularly, but Fine Gael / Fianna Fáil. It doesn't feel that people, to the people anyway, that they care about that fact.
I mean,
alienating. And I think the fact that Sinn Féin took this particular issue has really spoken to people.
I mean, no, you can see that a lot of Fine Gael's policies are absolutely unconcerned about how they actually impact on people. Like, they constantly bring up the energy rating of houses and then say, well, it's for environmental reasons, and they don't care that every time they do that, it makes it more and more difficult to purchase a house.
Only
because you drive up the initial costs.
Only recently, talking to a guy who had looked at doing some of this stuff that you told he should do to make his house, when he worked out the costs, the numbers he did are slightly on the back of an envelope, but, you know, they weren't that far. He said he would probably start to make money when he was 100 on the basis that he keep telling you, but you'll save money in the end. But as we've been pointing out, all of this cost is front-loaded. And if you're poor, you can't afford that cost. If you're middle-class, you can. But if you're poor, you can't. All of these things are excluded. We won't touch it, but classic, another example of just we don't care about how this is going to impact on you simply is minimum alcohol pricing. Whatever the goods or the bads of the policy, we think it's a bad policy, it's going to impact on poor people, and they don't seem to care. Like Harris just laughed it off. People aren't going to go. He says explicitly, it's targeting low-cost drink at low-cost drinkers. And he doesn't care, you know, people aren't going to go up to the north and buy slabs of beer. Now, I'm sure that people in Fine Gael, there are perfectly nice, decent people who care about the poor, but they're not giving that impression. And that's really what matters when you're in the middle of an election.
I mean, on one hand.
But did you think that Micheál Martin a couple of times felt just held back? It was Not quite like they were double teaming, as it were, Mary Lou, but rather if Leo had made a couple of times, I thought Leo, for example, had made a couple of good shots in on Mary Lou, and Michal was hanging back. There was an opportunity, but he wanted the blows to land.
I don't think Leo quite recognised that was what was happening.
No.
But I think Martin was trying to help him to attack Sinn Féin. And Leo, I mean, Fine Gael HQ during the week were asked what their response was going to be to the rise of Sinn Féin. And their response, anonymously to, I think it was Gavin Riley or one of the political reporters, was to say that their strategy was to go hard after Martin. And I think Fianna Fáil have sort of went, Sinn Féin is the issue here.
Yeah.
Sinn Féin needs. And that is a correct reading of, I would say, what's happening. But Fianna Fáil, or Fine Gael don't seem able to see it. So they're primarily going after Martin, and Martin was trying to get it to Mary Lou.
Yes.
I mean, one thing I will say is the entire election seems to be about how many people want change and what you're willing to roll the dice on to get that change. And
yeah,
by that metric, I don't think this did anything to harm Mary Lou. Now, what might harm Mary Lou is the media turn on Sinn Féin in the last 3 days has been incredible.
And I think that this is going to keep, this is, shall we say, the sub-election, the sub-campaign. And I think the next 3 days is going to keep going that way. And, you know, it's like people say, oh, I don't think that'll have an effect. Do you know what? The thing is, Gary, if you look back to the 2011 was the last election? So in 2011, Fine Gael were on their way to an overall majority. An overall majority which senior cabinet ministers later on confessed they didn't want. They wanted Labour in the government. But anyway, Labour, having been in Gilmore for Taoiseach, were desperately looking for something. So the last 5 days, 4 or 5 days, they decided they'd go on public sector pay, right? And they tried day one, didn't get much good day two. And everybody was saying, I can certainly remember the commentator all saying, no, people, it's not going to work, you know. But they kept on going. And eventually, after 5 or 6 days of doing it, 5 days, I think, then the election happened, some of it started to get grip, and enough grip for them to recover a couple of points and save a number of seats. I don't know how much with the time that's left, but I think they're going to, well, we'll see, but my sense is they're going to keep going at this. And it may end up having, on the new Sinn Féin voter, the ABC voter, the new guy on the block, the woman on the block, it may have an effect on them.
I mean, the Paul Quinn thing was not a great moment for them. And I would imagine over the next week we're going to see Paul Quinn's mother on TV and radio a significant amount. But at the end of the day, like I've seen Fine Gael staffers literally just sending like names and photos of people the IRA killed.
Yeah.
I'm like, ah, is this what you want?
Yeah.
And scare tactics.
The problem with that is, if you think something is the most important thing in the world, or absolutely horrific and absolutely terrible, it's very hard for you to understand when you're talking to somebody who doesn't really care that much. And it's not that people aren't horrified by the story of that chap, and it's a horrible story. But there is a sense of, well, yeah, but, you know, we're supposed to have moved on, and this is an election, and that's not really what this is about. No. To the extent there's a problem, I think Mary Lou needs to find a better answer. It wasn't even the answer, but she it was very cold.
She needs to, it's more, I think, a delivery issue.
Yeah, very cold.
And it shouldn't
cold.
Have been, because this is absolutely something they should have,
yes.
Should have seen come on. I did have one moment during the debate where I was like, oh, that, I may have done that. And it was the National Women's.
Yes, I pledge. Know. I was watching that and I thought, oh, God. Because it kind of broke on this. And it was so funny because you were going through. How did you come across this in the first place, the manifesto?
Oh, because I keep an eye on the government NGOs because I like to know what they're lobbying on.
So you, we're chatting away. You opened it up. And really what kicked it off was, you checked the people who had endorsed it, and to your, you found, oh look, there's your local, my local TD, which was to my absolute amazement. So we had a jolly good little laugh about that. And then it started. And from there, and then you have that moment when Leo said, you signed the National Women's Council. You said you want a rent freeze. And I go, oh, God.
Yeah, yeah. I got no one credited me that to me, by the way. I wrote about it first, then the PA picked it up, and then it ended up in the Independent at like 2:30 in the morning, which I assume is a very deliberate editorial choice. Uh-huh. I would have liked to be credited at some point. It's not a major issue. Still. But it's nice to be first to something.
Yeah.
Particularly because I do the whole reporting thing in my spare time.
Recorded in history, at least.
Mm.
The story first broke on the right side.
Which was quite funny. I've quite enjoyed seeing Michal sort of go, well, that was sent down from head office.
Yeah.
Which we want to talk about is as a per response to why you signed a 35-point election pledge, it was given to me, is not a great one.
I still say to you that the question that I want, and I wonder if they are still in employment, is how in the name of the seven snotty dwarves of Sally Noggin did the Fianna Fáil press office think it was a good idea to mass mail this to all of their TDs saying, sign up to this?
I'd say what happened is, at this time, Fianna Fáil, they were the highest in the poll. Fine Gael were falling. No one had foreseen Sinn Féin would start a rise like this. So I think that was the period when Fianna Fáil TDs were most arrogant. There was a feeling of, it is our time. We can only win, which turned very rapidly.
Which was fucking ridiculous. They were on 25-26%, and they were arrogant.
You're on 40%, maybe 25. No, but I'd say what happened is head office kind of went, "We're winning. This will get us more votes. Just sign it."
Also, maybe we're desperate to shed the tag of the anti-woman social conservative party. So, but lads, come on. Read it. It wasn't that long, and it was done in big letter.
And it was bullet-pointed.
You know, it really wasn't that hard. And I don't think you'd have to be a graduate in political science to read that and think, do you know what? I don't think this is where Fianna Fáil is. It was. Anyway, it was what it was. We won't drag it out too long. Just one question for you, Gary, which you can have no opinion on if you like. You very often don't. Turnout.
So
any sense of good for who, bad for who?
I think a Saturday election might be good for Sinn Féin. Sinn Féin, because their voters are strongly working class, is part of the reason their vote tends to underperform. But if you move that to a Saturday and those people aren't actually working, I think it makes it more likely they will vote, and that lessens the chance that Sinn Féin's vote will collapse to the extent we've seen in other elections. You also told me that there is a rugby match on the Saturday of the election.
It was not unique to him, but I was talking to a prominent Fine Gaeler from Cork who was genuinely incandescent about the fact that there is apparently a rugby match on in Dublin, and he said that there will be thousands and thousands of men going up to Dublin for the rugby match from Cork and from Limerick. He was of the opinion that it could well have been done deliberately to undermine Simon Coveney's vote. Because I said, but sure, they can vote before they go, surely. I mean, Dublin, like, it's 2 hours up the motorway. And thousands of them will go up the night before and stay over. Because that's what they always do. And those are all Fine Gael votes. Apparently, if you support rugby in Munster, everybody in Limerick and Cork as well, is a Fine Gaeler. And he was absolutely full 100% conspiracy theory that this was an attack on Fine Gael and Munster.
So it is an Ireland versus Wales game, which seems like it's a Six Nations game, is it?
Big game, yeah. There will be, I'm sure.
I don't want to say that as if I know anything about rugby, I don't.
There will be many thousands, several thousand people who will go up from Cork and from Limerick.
He's probably right that will hurt Fine Gael more than Sinn Féin.
I think Sinn Féin is less likely to be impacted by that.
So we have an election called by Fine Gael on a day which may help anyone who has a more working class voting demographic, and on which there is a major rugby match, which considering they picked the date.
Yeah, in fairness, you know. They could have...
And for all like people listening might think, well, how much difference could that make? Rain can make a substantial difference. So
absolutely. Rain was the difference between divorce passing, divorce failing in the 90s. It lashed in the west and was sunny in the east, and divorce passed by a sliver. It can make all the difference. But generally speaking, say when the polls close and they announce the turnout across the country, on a general high turnout, low turnout. High turnout, good for the big parties, bad for Sinn Féin, good for Sinn Féin. What do you think?
I don't know, because the polling breakdown is so different than what we traditionally get that I don't know. If it's an election where people strongly want change and people who don't usually vote are breaking to Sinn Féin,
yeah,
high turnout would seem to very much favour Sinn Féin.
Yeah. I'm going to have my fiver on high turnout, Sinn Féin, low turnout, good for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael.
I mean, that Sinn Féin have a lot of people who now say they're going to vote for them who haven't voted before.
Yes.
Either because they're young or because they usually don't vote.
Yeah.
So if you get a massive turnout, those people have voted. If you get a low turnout, those people haven't. And then it goes back to your more traditional Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Labour voters.
And it's when those people vote that you have the game changers. So we shall see. We shall wait with bated breath. You say we'll only have one more about the election. Well, we probably may have only one more about the election. But you never know. We could have 4 months about the formation of the government.
We could, and then we could have a second general election.
Oh, that's a joy. Okay, anyway, listen. We'll return to the world, I think. World of normality and things, and I would say we shall be back when we know a little bit more. Maybe we know a little bit more. Are we going back on Sunday or Monday?
I don't know. Depends on how much is released Sunday. We may go Sunday, we may go Monday.
We shall see.
We'll see.
And how well we are Sunday morning.
That's true, after the raucous election night dinner party.
Okay. Anyway, until then, I'll say bye-bye.
All the best.